Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to start the show today by talking with you about the trades. You know, the U.S. Department of Education says that in the next 5 years, there will be 68% more job openings in infrastructure-related fields than there are people trying to fill them. So there's some real opportunities for work in the trades, building trades, plumbing trades. We'll talk about this lack of skilled tradespeople with our guest, Bernie Friedenfels. He's a master plumber in northern Door County. He's got Bernie's Well and Water is the name of his company. He's on the board of directors for the Plumbing, Heating, Cooling Contractors Association of Wisconsin. And he'll talk about the association, what it's doing to recruit people to the trades, how you can get involved. And he'll also take your plumbing questions as well. I see we had somebody already calling in with a question in that particular area. But questions about apprenticeships or how do you get involved in the trades? Are you in the trades right now and experiencing some problems? Maybe you want to talk and raise those issues too. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. And Bernie Friedenfels, welcome. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you're part of the Plumbing, Heating, Cooling Contractors Association of Wisconsin. What's that organization all about?
We're a nonprofit organization. We're an advocacy for the plumbing and heating cooling contractors in the state of Wisconsin. It's also part of the national organization. We're just the Wisconsin chapter. And our mission is a few things. We have to provide continuing education for our credentialed tradesmen, which are required under state law to get so many hours of continuing education every year.
Yeah.
So we provide those courses. And our director, Jeff Beiriger, he is very active in state and federal government to help send the messages about our trade and things that we need to have done and maintain, whether it's licensing. We have some members that are on different plumbing advisory committees at the state level. And all that is to help keep solid plumbing code and licensed tradesmen to assure that we do two things: protect the health of the people in the nation and protect the waters of the state.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a kind of a large task, but it's pretty simple. And there's so many things in place in your house and business that has to do with plumbing that prevents contamination of groundwater, drinking water. And it all comes around, you know, the code book is a couple inches thick. Mm-hmm. And it takes a long time to get through that code book and understand everything you do when a building is constructed to make sure plumbing will follow that code definition.
Well, you know, it seems like the trend has been, though, the last many, many years that families say, okay, you got to go to college to get your college degree. But there's real opportunity in the trades. I mean, you still have to go to school to learn. I mean, you know, take those courses to learn, but there's real opportunities.
Yeah, right now there's, you know, tremendous opportunity. But let's talk about how it is to get into plumbing, because it's not real traditional in the typical sense.
Yeah.
So let's just take a student who's graduating from high school in this coming spring. He may say, I'm going to go to school. He may go to a four-year college, university, or whatever. He may walk into a technical college and look over what their courses are and say, I want to go into power distribution and work for a utility company. So these courses are in their coursework, and you can look at it and go, I'm going to take two semesters, and I'm going to take this class, and at the end of 2 years, I'll take my test, or my two semesters, I'll take my test, and I'll get my certificate, and I'm going to go apply to a bunch of different utility companies. I'll get hired, and I'm off and running with my career. With plumbing, you can't do that. And that's where this disconnect comes in, which is why I'm here today, is to say, here are the steps you have to take. So if you're interested in plumbing, you have to have a plumbing license to do plumbing in the state of Wisconsin, and
yep,
I think every state. So you first have to be hired by a plumbing company who will sponsor you to start your apprenticeship. So you can't just walk into a tech school and say, I want to take your five-year apprenticeship. So once you walk in, and how do you pick a plumbing company you want to work for? Well, you got to do a little research. Maybe mm-hmm. you know someone who's a plumber, and they say, well, I really like working here, but geez, we could use somebody. We're short on, you know, quality employees. So you go and you see the employer, and you say, I'm here. I'm interested in plumbing. Once you get through your interview process and he agrees that he's going to hire you, they take you to the state apprenticeship board, mm-hmm. and you both sign a contract saying your intentions are to fulfill this five-year apprenticeship. And a five-year apprenticeship includes about 3.5 years of day school, one day every 2 weeks at the technical college. That's your paid training at school. They pay you to go to school that day and learn the code book and everything that's involved in taking your test to pass and get your license. The rest of the time, you're at work. So this is on-the-job, yeah. paid training, paid schooling. And the difference is, from traditional going to a four-year college, you're getting an education and you're being paid to work at the same time. So after you complete your five-year apprenticeship, which is about 3.5 years of day school, 3 to 4 years of some night classes, you're going to take welding, blueprint reading, isometric drawing, first aid, OSHA courses, everything to make you well-rounded in all these different areas. And then also in those 5 years, you're working on the job. That's where you learn the hands-on skills. You're applying the code work that you're learning in school, the night classes where they're teaching you proper techniques, and then you're going to go out and you're going to apply it in the job, out in the field. Once you've completed 5 years of apprenticeship, which is a minimum of 8,000 documented hours that you've been on the job working mm-hmm. in the field, your 3.5 years of day school, and your night hours, which is like right around 600 hours of night school. Okay. Mm-hmm. Once you complete those, the apprenticeship board will give you your certificate, and that entitles you to go to the state and take your journeyman's test. Mm-hmm. It's a 6-hour exam, 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the afternoon, and once you pass that, you're a journeyman. Then, if you want to become a master plumber, you have to document your hours for 3 more years, a minimum of 1,000 hours a year. Your employer signs off on it. Then you go take your master's exam, which is an 8-hour exam. Mm-hmm. And once you do that, then you're a master plumber. So you have a minimum of 8 years to become a master plumber. And in the state, you cannot own a plumbing company unless you are a master plumber. So it takes a while to get here, but it's a good path because by the time you become a master plumber, you have a lot of experience.
Yeah.
So, this is open to people who someday want to maybe own their own business, like working with their hands. This is a great opportunity.
Well, it sounds like it, and you are getting paid, although Steve emailed to say that he guesses apprentices make maybe $12 or $15 an hour. And he says, well, if they paid more, maybe they'd be more in the program.
Well, it's an interesting point. There's a fellow by the name of Todd Keel at NWTC in Green Bay, and I spoke with Todd at length about this. There isn't a maximum wage that someone can pay you. It's market rate. They can pay you more, but they can't bill you out more than that. But starting wage for an apprentice is $16.50 an hour.
Okay.
And it does have, it's adjusted every year for cost of living, but that's a graduated scale up to, and I should know this number exactly, but it's around $29 an hour, which is the minimum suggested pay mm-hmm. rate for a journeyman plumber. So once you go through your five-year apprenticeship, your pay keeps increasing every 6 months or 9 months. And then when you pass your journeyman's, your employer should, he's not required to, but he should pay you that wage. And if he doesn't, well, in today's market, he's not going to retain you.
So, and the employer is also paying for the schooling? Some of it, at least.
Some employers will. Some will pay you for your books and your tuition. Others will say, I'm paying you more than $16.50 an hour because we want to keep you, but you're going to pay your own tuition. It's negotiable. So okay. It can go either way.
So in the end, the when I think about what it costs to get a college education and so forth, the cost probably is quite a bit less if you look at it from the standpoint of you're getting paid 8 hours a day.
Most apprentices, when they're finished with their five-year apprenticeship, will be $200,000 ahead of a five-year bachelor's of fine arts degree. That's straight from Todd at NWTC.
Wow.
$200,000 a head. Most plumbers will finish their apprenticeship without any student debt.
So why do we have a shortage?
We're not sure.
We wish you knew.
Yeah, if we had that answer, we may not be here today. But it's just maybe it's people different tastes of what they want to do. Maybe they don't know how to, all the trades are suffering for skilled labor. And so here's actually what's happening. And again, I spoke with Todd and he gave me some of this information, which is important. Employers are actually going right into the high schools and recruiting for labor right out of school. So they're getting carpenters and masons and bricklayers and, flat. Yep. So these guys are graduating high school and they're going right out and getting in a work truck and going to work and they're making good money. And that's fine and dandy. But what's going to happen when we get the next boom here and it busts, and now we have a bunch of unskilled, well, they'll be semi-skilled, non-credentialed people who are now going to be battling out with... We've seen this
credentialed,
before.
Credentialed, yeah.
Yeah, and credentials go a long way, and that certificate says a lot. And a lot of times we don't want to admit that having that degree hanging on the wall says something, but it does say something.
Nick in Beloit wonders how do parents encourage their kids to look into the trades?
I've got kids of my own, and I guess they're going to do what they want to do. Maybe it starts at an early age of driving home the importance of growing up and being responsible and being a contributor. But you got to look at your kids. If your son or daughter is in a shop class and they're bringing home projects and they're proud of them and they really get some satisfaction out of building things, or they like to help with projects around the home, maybe you should explore that and take them to one of the technical college. I toured Chippewa Valley Technical College, their buildings out on the west side. It's phenomenal. I went in there for their HVAC program. It's a two-year program, and they have rows and rows of furnaces, air conditioning units, and in your 2 years or your two semesters that you're there, you're going to learn all these different products, how to troubleshoot them, fix them, replace them, repair them, and in two semesters you're out working. But these schools, once you walk inside of them, NWTC in Green Bay, you walk down the halls and you can see and feel the difference that they're there to teach you skills to do things.
Yeah.
And that's how maybe getting them a little excited for the future is let them go in there and get a taste of that. It's different. Yeah.
Jack in Burlington has something that may relate to this. Jack, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for having me on the air. I just wanted to kind of have a shout out as people looking to get into the trades. Almost every trade has a union. I'm a journeyman for the Steam Fitters Union, and I went through the apprenticeship, and I do service for heating and cooling. And the apprenticeships work a lot the same way, where you get paid to go to day school, and all your night school is also paid for. And then you finish the test, and it's a great way to do the apprenticeship program.
He's exactly right, and thank you. Whether you're in a union or a non-union shop, the apprenticeship program is the same. There just may be some different perks as who's paying for what.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Jack. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. We're talking about breaking into the plumbing trade and the other trades as well with our guest, Bernie Friedenfels. He's a master plumber in northern Door County on the board of directors of the for the Plumbing, Heating, Cooling Contractors Association of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at the trades today with Bernie Friedenfels, master plumber in northern Door County. Talk with him about the trades and breaking into them. He can also take some of your plumbing questions, too, because, among other things, he owns Bernie's Well and Water, and he's a member of the board of directors of the Plumbing, Heating, Cooling Contractors Association of Wisconsin. So great to have him with us today. And certainly, again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Mike in Platteville next. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I just wanted to kind of add to the conversation a little bit. I've worked 30 years in the trades, 15 years non-union as a carpenter, and 15 years as a glazer and a proud union member. And there's a lot that's not being covered here. First of all, I'd like to say that the social zeitgeist around anti-union sentiments is something that really needs to be discussed. Our great state of Wisconsin became a right-to-work state not too long ago. There was quite a bit of vilification of public sector unions. Those of us in private sector unions recognized right away that as soon as Act 10 became law, it wouldn't be long before the rest of our union security was taken from us. Outside of that, being a carpenter, to some extent a plumber, a glazer, there are a lot of trades that work outside 300 days a year. It doesn't matter if it's 10 below zero. We come into contract negotiations with my union every 3 years. And for 2.5 years, my employer loves me. And then in the months before contract negotiations and shortly thereafter, everything is ugly.
Yeah.
Work seems to run short and tempers seem to run shorter.
Yeah. So there's.
And so I think that we need to change the discussion. Why do we need skilled tradespeople? Because for the last 35 years, we've been denigrating trades work. Wages have been relatively stagnant. I was 15 years in the union. My actual wage on the paycheck went up less than $4 an hour over 15 years, 5 and 10 cents at a time. Health insurance and other things tend to eat a big chunk out of whatever negotiated raise union people make. We need to treat our tradespeople better. We need to start respecting the fact that a man or a woman who is a journey person in a good trade is fully capable of also earning a master's degree and being a teacher. It takes that level of intelligence, skill, and dedication to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think you're probably going to agree with that, Bernie. It does take a high degree of intelligence to do this and perseverance because, as Mike was saying, a lot of times you may work in some pretty adverse conditions.
It's not for the faint of heart, for sure. I mean, you know, I remember 5 years ago up in northern Door County, we had 52 days of below zero temperatures and city water mains were freezing and we were working.
I remember that.
We couldn't work enough hours and we'd go home frozen, cold, hungry, and tired, and we just kept doing it. And, you know, it's a pride thing, too. Your self-satisfaction, you're helping people get things they need to have done. It's a hard job and it's not for everyone, you know. And I want to bring up another point. I want to back up here because I don't want to forget this. To become a master plumber, I laid out the 5-year apprenticeship program, okay? And that is the traditional way to become a master plumber. There's another way, and we can't discount it because it is very valuable. And this is from the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services. So it's in writing and it is legitimate. If you are if you have an engineering degree from a civil engineering, mechanical engineering, from an accredited university or college, you can use that degree to get your permit to go in and take your master's exam. Now, I will say, if you have just gone through engineering school, depending on what you did, if you have never worked in plumbing, taking an 8-hour master's exam is going to be really, really tough. There are guys that have been in plumbing for 10 years and they go and take their master's test and they don't pass the first time. It's a daunting task. So we can't neglect that there are two ways to become a master plumber in Wisconsin. And actually, the third way is a transfer in from another state. So just to point out that there's a couple different ways to get into the master plumber.
And on the union side of things, I want to save that for another show. I think it's a sort of a bigger conversation that is too big for the 15 minutes or so that we've got left here. I wanted to look at an email that Nick sent. Nick emailed to encourage anybody interested in Wisconsin apprenticeship to visit wisconsinapprenticeship.org for information. And that's probably another place that you're aware of.
Yep.
Bernie, wisconsinapprenticeship.org. Justin emailed to ask how do working adults, okay, so you've been out, you've been working for a while, and then you're doing things other than the trades, and you're maybe interested in getting into the trades, is the process is probably the same as what you described, I would
think. Yeah, I don't see it any different. I guess I would suggest that they kind of have a feeling for which trade they want to get into.
Yeah, sure.
And talk to people, but I'm gonna point to these technical colleges. We have 16 technical colleges in Wisconsin that all offer apprenticeships, and that's a great starting point to go in there and talk to someone when they, you know, when they have this feeling to say, well, I want to see what's out there. They're the best source almost.
Yeah.
Go see what they have to say.
Yeah, that's really, I think, good advice. Steve in DeForest had something for us. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I have some friends in northern Wisconsin who have a concrete business, and they do great work. And it definitely takes some skill, but it's very hard work, and they really, you know, and I'm all for the skilled trades, but I believe every one of them needs to be paid more. The work there they're doing is so hard, I can't see anyone doing that for less than $50 an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard work, and at the end of their career, it takes a toll on their body.
You got that right.
Yeah.
And so I just can't see them not get, they really do need to get compensated more and some righteous time off also throughout the year. So I still think compensation is an issue in some areas of skilled trades.
Yeah.
Although, of course, a lot of young people aren't too motivated for sure today. But I still think that's one issue that's got to needs good hard look.
Well, Steve, you have some good points there, and I want to point out some statistics from the Wisconsin Technical College system. They have a website, and they surveyed the 2015-2016 apprentices. And the median wage, which means half were higher and half were lower, it's not an average, it's half, median salary for the construction industry was $72,000 a year. And that's pretty decent. So what, again, when I said before, we have the employers going right into the schools and recruiting workers, that could be detrimental to their pay scale because they don't really have any bargaining chip on their side. And they may not be, I hate to call it a commodity, but you may not be as much of a commodity to other employers unless you have those credentials.
Yeah, there you go. But your point about the median wage being $72,000—that's pretty darn good.
That's a good income.
A good income. Annalisa in Green Bay, your turn.
Hi. My question, I guess this has to be asked, is what about women in the trades? And are women going into these programs? Are women finishing and succeeding? How's it looking for women? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. I just read an article. Jill Nadeau, my producer, handed me an article about everybody in the trades, but several of the people that were interviewed were women and seemed to be pretty happy with their choices.
Yeah, I mean, we don't discriminate men, women. Whoever can work and do the job right is what we want. And actually, there's a woman by the name of Lenita Dokken. I think she was the state's first female master plumber, and she now owns a winery over in Trumbull, Wisconsin. But there are certainly no restrictions. If you can do the labor and pass the test, men or women, it doesn't matter.
And again, probably for women and anybody, mm-hmm. Taking a look at their area vocational schools, Madison College has got a great program. I mean, there are a lot of great programs throughout the state, as you were saying, Bertie.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's where everybody kind of really needs to go. Well, you know what? We got a question from Jim in Green Bay, who's been waiting a long time, and he's got a question about a plumbing issue, I believe. Jim, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning. Hi. Yes, I have a plumbing question. It's regarding, to begin with, I have a two-story home, approximately 30 years old. I have an issue on the second floor in the master bedroom area where the trap for the whirlpool tub, when you flush the toilet in that bathroom, the water is being siphoned out of that trap.
Okay.
Now, to give you some an idea how that was laid out. For example, I have one roof vent stack coming out of the roof, and about 4 feet down, when you go in, when you see it in your, when you're in the attic area, about 4 feet down, there is a Y there, and off that Y, there's a 2-inch plastic vent line that runs approximately 60 feet across the top of the ceiling joists, going towards that bathroom, and
that's a big. That's long.
Yeah,
it is long. Now, the issue is more noticeable in the wintertime, apparently because of the cold temperatures in the attic, that if there's any water in that vent line, that it freezes, and I can hear that gurgling sound when you flush the toilet in the bathroom every day, you know, other than turning on the tub faucet and filling up the trap with water.
Mm-hmm.
In the summertime, with the heat in the attic, it seems that maybe that if there's any water there, it evaporates with the heat in the attic or the warmth of the plastic.
Yeah,
it's very possible that, you know, in that vent pipe, there's a mouse nest or a bird nest, and when it's dry out, the air is able to pass through it. And, you know, there's a minimum size for a termination of a roof vent, and it's got to be at least 2 inches. And you get into an attic, and it's easy for a horizontal pipe. With air moving back and forth through it in cold space, it might just frost right over and plug.
So can you, I'm putting my head on this, can you put heat tape on that? Can you, is there something, what can you do to?
Well, first of all, I would suggest going up and make sure it doesn't have a low spot, or, you know, some support hangers that have broken and there's a low spot or a belly in the pipe. And if it's cast iron, maybe consider cutting it out and putting in PVC, making sure there's nothing in there, and maybe change the route of the pipe so it doesn't have such a long horizontal flat run possibly.
Yeah, that's a long distance. Well, something else to think about, Jim. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Jim in Bailey's Harbor, let's go to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Ernie.
Hey, good morning.
I guess as a fellow contractor, fellow tradesperson, totally understand the concept of hard work, all weather, pros and cons of making money. But Bernie, as an independent business owner, you know, one of the things I think possibly for recruitment, the opportunity, you know, what's so great about being out there, hanging in the wind, being your own boss? You know, what, more so, yeah, just more of like a conceptual concept. Why? You know, why are you doing it? What makes
me click?
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And you know, Jim's kind of hitting there, and he's breaking up a little bit, so we're missing him. But the joy of being your own boss.
Yeah. I mean, when I was hired into plumbing, I worked for somebody, and I said, "Yeah, I have no interest in ever being my own boss. I don't want to have to own a truck, buy insurance, and do all these things." And you know, I was there for 13 years, and then one day you wake up, and you know, your kid is in basketball, and you want to make sure you're off on Thursday afternoons, and you know, your life changes, and all of a sudden I got to that point, and I said, you know, I really want to be self-employed. I think I can manage a business. I think I can have something different to offer my customers. And it's you're controlling your own destiny. You know, I hate to admit it because it sounds bad, but I'm work 24 hours a day because I'm always thinking about work. I wake up at 2 a.m. sometimes, and I think about the day I have ahead of me. And I never wake up and go, oh, geez, I got to go do this again. But I'm always thinking about the next step and what I have to do. But it's fulfillment. And then what happens is, because I control everything in my business, a lot of my customers end up becoming good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And in a small community, you know, my joke is I hardly can get through Main Street Market in Egg Harbor because I run into so many people I know I've done work for, and my kids won't even go there anymore with me because I'll go in just to get one thing and I'm in there for an hour. So it's fulfilling that you build a lot of friendships and customer relationships, and it's just a fulfilling thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you called, Jim. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, you can join in too, 800-642-1234. Evergreen in Washburn, it's your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I know when you're learning the trades, you need to learn about building codes and plumbing codes. And mm-hmm. we just had a new holding tank septic system installed. And one of the codes that they talked about was that it had to be within 30 feet of the dwelling. And couldn't have it any farther away than that. And I'm just wondering why that is and what's behind codes like that.
Well, that's a good question. Had to be no more than 30 feet from the house is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So it has to be at least, I believe, 10 feet from the house, but why only a maximum distance? That's probably what their code number was based on freezing and insulating and maybe setbacks from other items, property line, other utilities. But probably, you know, when I built a house once, my septic tank was... good golly, 75 or 100 feet from the house. It was a long ways away. And it cost more because we wanted it further from the house, but we had to insulate it. And it takes time and money, but that was, you know, wasn't going to be a determining factor for us, was distance, but we paid more for it. So it probably has to do with frost.
Oh, probably with frost. Evergreen, thank you so much. Mike in Appleton, Allenton, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, I have a question. Our washer and dryer's in the basement. Now, every time the washer fills up with either cold or hot, it doesn't matter, I get banging pipes every time that water starts.
Yeah.
What is the reason for that?
Well, there's a few things. First of all, devices with electric solenoids, such as dishwashers and wash machines, under current code are required to have hammer arresters at their water connection to the plumbing system. And that's a little... tube with an air chamber in it because those solenoids open and close faster than you can imagine, the water that's traveling in or out stops very quickly. And another thing is, if you have really nice high water pressure, you also have faster moving water. So when those little electric valves open and close quickly, that does cause water hammer. And if your pipes are banging, go through your house in the basement or wherever and see if you have pipe supports that are loose, missing, if the pipe is just laying on the rafters or whatever. And that when that water stops quickly, all those pipes are going to shake a little.
So that might something Mike could fix on his own, probably.
Yeah, he could do some work up front on his own for sure.
Yeah, at least to see where the problem might be. Well, that's good advice. Thank you, Mike, for calling. Appreciate your call. So somebody else was asking about the cold temperatures that we've got this week. What do you have to do to keep your water pipes from freezing?
Good point. Good question, Larry. Yesterday I spent 5 hours at a condo building. The third floor froze and flooded 4 units below it.
Oh.
It was a 32-year-old building, and they said, why hasn't it frozen yet? You know, we've had colder days. And, you know, we open up the wall and we start looking around, and insulation had settled. Maybe mice had built a nest and stole insulation from one location, took it to another. And when we cut a hole in the wall, because that's where the water was spraying,
yeah.
You stuck your hand in the wall and you could just feel cold air rushing through. So if your house is properly built and insulated and heated, you're not going to have freezing pipes. A lot of times you can see kitchens with the kitchen sink or maybe bathrooms with a shower on an outside wall, which is really a bad idea, because if there's not an easy way to get heat into that space and it's zero out and the wind is blowing, any heat that may be there, if you have, you know, we have to put vapor barriers on the outsides of our houses before we insulate them or sheet them. But when that wind goes through, it blows away any existing heat, and it's not hard to get it down to a freezing temperature. So make sure you have crawl space vents that are closed, insulate those sill boxes, you know, and if you're building a house, don't put pipes in outside walls.
That's probably as good of advice as you could give today on the show, Bernie. It's been a lot of fun talking to you. Just in conclusion, for people who might be interested in getting into the trades, what's your advice?
Go to the technical college and see what's available. don't discount walking up to employers today and saying, I'm interested in a job with you, because they're not getting that right now. And I don't know if it's people are afraid, not confident. You know, we're so used to dealing with electronic media now. I'm going to tell you, a lot of plumbers that own companies probably aren't sitting on Facebook all day. They're out working. And if you walk up, knock on the door at the end of the day and say, I'd like to learn about becoming a plumber, you're probably going to make a lot of people's day. You know, ask questions, be optimistic. It's not easy work. It's very fulfilling, but you have to put some legwork into it.
And so there you go. Bernie, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
Bernie Friedenfels is a master plumber in Northern Door County, on the board of for the Plumbing, Heating, Cooling Contractors Association. Do you have a website, too, by the way?
I do not.
But the Plumbing, Heating, Cooling Contractors Association does, I will bet.
Yes, they do. And I should know, I think it says phcc-wi.com.org. I'd have to look it up.
If you type in Wisconsin Board, if you type in Plumbing, Heating, Cooling Contractors Association for Wisconsin, it's going
to
pop up.
If you type PHCC Wisconsin, it'll come right to you.
There we go. Well, great to have him along, and good to talk about. This is an area that we certainly need more people in plumbing and all of the other trades as well. There's a real shortage right now, and so it's worth taking a look, or worth it for you if you have kids or grandkids, you want to talk to them about it. There's a lot of good information out there. It can be hard work, but there's also financially and otherwise, there's a lot of opportunity there. The apprenticeship program, too, the WisconsinApprenticeship.org has some information as well, so take a look at that. Well, once you've made a little money, you probably want to invest it, maybe. And we'll talk about investing in the market next with Frank Armstrong, Certified Financial Planner.